I learned how to manage my time better. I learned how to plan ahead. I learned how to set goals and achieve them. And I also learned how to say no to people when I didn't want to do something. Like, you know, so for me, setting people up for success out of that is just helping them make some minor adjustments to the way they look at food, the way they look at fitness. You know, a lot of people think of fitness as like, I have to go to the gym. No, you don't. Walk your dog a little extra. Buy a treadmill for your house. Put a weight set in the garage. Make fitness fit your routine. Don't make it like so difficult to have to go to the gym or have to do something. Make it a part of your routine.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference. 111, 110.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO. My name is Dennis Bonino, and this is our podcast with Paul Revelia. Did I get that right?
I say Revella, but I accept all.
My last name's Bonino, dude, and people fuck this thing up nonstop, and it's just not that hard. But I was close, so Revella. Paul Revella, nice Italian last name, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Paul is... has a significant following on Instagram amongst other platforms, but let him tell you what he does. Some cool content out there. That's kind of how I found you. I was seeing shit. It related to me. And I'm like, look at this. It was actually the transition video where you were like 30 days out or whatever. And you're like 30 days this age. And you went from looking like this to looking shredded as fuck. So that stuff is important to me. I think it's important to a lot of people because I think at 41 going on 42, I am still figuring things out about diet and nutrition, which I'm sure you have a big grasp on as doing what you do. But without further ado, first of all, thanks for being here. Number two, tell us who you are and what you do.
I mean, the big picture, what I do is I'm a coach. I coach athletes. I myself compete in bodybuilding. I have been for 15 years. I started as an athlete and then just got interested in kind of manipulating my body. But over the course of the last 30 years of trying to figure that out, I've learned some things. And so during that journey of competing and coaching athletes, I started sharing my content almost by accident on YouTube. And that kind of catapulted me over the years to where, you know, I do a lot of, you know, my company has our own podcast. So I've learned that, you know, putting out content is a good idea. It's kind of against my grain, you know, because I'm a 47-year-old guy. So I didn't grow up with social media or the internet or any of that stuff. So I've had to pay attention to some of my peers and get out of my own way. And I've learned a lot from people like Gary Vee. But at this point, you know, I own a company called Pro Physique. We have about 40 employees, 30 of which are coaches. We have a whole staff of people that help with, you know, the back end stuff, the website stuff, the development stuff. But I still at the core, I'm just a coach trying to learn everything I can and put out some information to help people and some platforms to help people.
Where'd you grow up?
Tarpon Springs, Florida. It's just right outside of Tampa.
You still in Florida?
Yeah. So I've moved all around Florida, but my wife and I settled back in the Tampa area after our first son was born, getting close to the family stuff, you know, as a serial dater into my 30s. Once I got married and had kids, it was like, oh, I'm going to go back to that place where those people really helped me.
Dude, Florida must have been a hell of a place to grow up as a single dude.
I lived in Fort Lauderdale and Orlando for the greater portion of my single years. And I will confirm that it is a good place to be single for sure.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I feel like Florida is one of those states, like when you're from there, you don't leave there. It's oddly enough, it's how Jersey is too, as strange as that may sound, because it's a very unique experience here. And I'm sure you have about half of your friends and neighbors are from New York and New Jersey at this point.
Oh yeah. When I go to baseball games for like a Yankees Rays game, I feel like it's a Yankees home game. Mm-hmm. But I feel like what's funny about Florida, we're kind of our own country. So like depending on maybe Jersey's the same way, depending on what phase of your life in, you move to different parts of the state, right? So like when you're young and you want to party, go to Fort Lauderdale. When you get a little bit older, move back up to Tampa, Jacksonville. So like, just depends what phase of your life you're in.
It's an amazing state. It's a great state, and it's fucking hot as fuck.
It's really hot. But I, you know, when you grow up here, I think you just adapt to it. I don't know. I feel I'm cold any other place I go. So yeah, I'm just used to it. My wife and I, you know, we go skiing and stuff, and I'm there for about a week. I'm like, nope, done with this.
So I can't. Yeah, no, I get it, dude. Like
a whole
winter. I honestly agree. The weather here does get bitter, and it's very annoying. And if I could be a snowbird, I would. But unfortunately, our company's a little premature for me to not be here as much as I have to be here to ensure that the growth continues. But dude, I figured, you know, we could go into a few questions off the top of my head of like, what are some of the things that you could share with our community about, let's call it like maybe top three nutritional factors that people should take into consideration that might, you know, iterate a significant change in how they look. So everybody wants to look good. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to probably correlate a lot of my story to this, and you'll probably be able to, I mean, in some selfish way, tweak some of the things that I'm doing, give me some advice as well.
Yeah.
But let's start with that. Let's start with like three things that everybody should know about their diet and their appearance.
Yeah. I think even nowadays, with there's so much overwhelming information about, should you be doing cold plunges? Should you be avoiding seed oils? There's all this almost like, you almost feel like paralyzed because there's so much nutrition information out there. I always, the first thing I ever do with someone that says to me, hey, I want to look like this, or I want to lose this weight, I go, okay, well, you know, what's your diet look like right now? Well, I kind of eat this and I kind of eat that. I say, plug it into an app. I mean, we have this amazing technology now where you can literally, any restaurant you go to, any food that you eat has a barcode. You can literally plug it into an app and have some accountability. And what I almost always see is that people are way over consuming fat and way under consuming protein. And if sometimes if you just switch those around, that will literally change you, because you'll be less hungry. You'll also improve your body composition and performance. And that's the first thing. You know, if you want me to give you three, track, focus more on your protein. And the other would be, don't demonize foods. Don't create a binary thinking where like, I'm eating healthy and I'm not eating healthy. All food is healthy, unless you have a disease or you have some type of situation where, like, you know, I can't have dairy because I'm lactose intolerant or sensitive to it. So for me, it's a bad thing, but dairy is great. So I don't ever think of something as like off limits. That kind of thinking allows me to just go, yeah, I'm in the mood for a burger and fries. I'm going to fit that into my numbers today and just move on with my life and not call it a cheat meal, right? Because I think that type of thinking, you go, I'm off my plan, I'll just get back on Monday. Meanwhile, it's Wednesday, right? So those would be my three big ticket items, is not getting too caught up in the doing the right thing or the wrong thing, but just kind of being consistent.
You find as a coach, when you have clients, that there's people have different body compositions and programs should be tailored individually to, depending on what the goals are of the person in some sense,
Yeah. Absolutely. Because I work specifically mostly with competitors at this point. So, you know, depending on what division they compete in, I've got to work on their physique to say, you know, we need to bring up this body part so it's in unison with the rest of the physique. So I'm, you know, when I first started coaching, I didn't have the luxury of handpicking the clients I worked with. So I worked with people that were cyclists, marathon runners, you know, power lifters, bodybuilders, just the average person that wants to lose 20 pounds. So creating a program based around their lifestyle, I think, is the most important thing. You know, not trying to make everyone adhere to my style of training and living, but going, okay, what days can you train? Cool. You can only train 4 days a week. Okay. I'm going to write a program based around that. Not saying, you know, you've got to take a complete departure from your life as a mom, a husband, a friend to do this. And the adherence goes way up when it fits someone's lifestyle.
What are some of the reasons that people fail when you're giving them coaching? Is it just a failure? They just don't want to do it. How do we get people into the mindset of like submitting? This is what you want to look like. This is the result. You have to get into a stage of your brain where you're going to commit to something like this. Where's the failure has been, where the success has been?
The most common reason for failure is that we don't have a deadline, right? So if you just tell me like, you know, I kind of want to lose 10 pounds. That's an awesome goal. But kind of wanting to lose 10 pounds is usually going to get trumped by man, my friend's in town. I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks and he wants me to meet him at the bar. If you say I am doing a, you know, a transformation challenge and for the next 12 weeks, and then your friend comes into town, you go, hey, it's great to see you, dude. But for this 12 weeks, I can't really go out drinking with you. I'll come out to the bar and have a Red Bull, but I'm not going to get shit faced because I want to look the best. So the deadline for me is the key. It was for me. That's why I did my, when I did my first bodybuilding competition, it's the first time I ever looked like I thought, wow, this is actually the people in the magazines look like this. That's why, because they have a deadline. So when someone says to me, like, I want to look like the people that get on bodybuilding stage, but I don't want to get on a stage, I go, you're probably not going to ever get that look. You know, some people maybe, but it's very rare. So some kind of a deadline. I don't care if it's a vacation. A wedding is a great one. People getting married get shredded. I call it shredding for the wedding. Bodybuilding shows, photo shoots, reunion, whatever you can find to motivate you, do that thing.
You know, it's interesting. I went to Vegas with my wife years ago, and it actually, I said, you know, I'm going to come to Vegas every year for these pool parties because it kept me disciplined up to this point, even for Mykonos, Greece. I was pretty happy, not thrilled, because I'm now learning more about protein. It's so interesting you brought that up and like how significant the protein is in my life. And you talk about switching some of that stuff around. So, you know, there, I'm putting a lot of more thought into that. I've probably been, you know, I've been lifting now for, since I'm 18, so I'll be 42 this year. So almost 24 years I've been lifting. And I think about now at 41, going on 42, how much I probably could have had an easier transition or an easier goal or achieve my goals easier if I had just put more thought into some of the diet. Certainly I'm not upset with the way I look or how strong I am or how I feel. I mean, I fucking feel fine. I don't know, Paul, I don't know how you feel. I feel great.
I mean, honestly, if you told me at 47, I was going to feel this way, I would have called you a liar. Like, I don't think, I don't know if it's a generational thing. I just feel like 40s are different than, like, when I think back to my dad at 40, I just felt like he was like an old man almost. I don't feel old. I mean, honestly, I don't feel old till I look in the mirror. When I tell my friends all the time, this is the best I've ever felt on all aspects of my life.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel, people are like, hey, you know, how do you feel? I'm like, I feel like I did when I was 19, maybe even better, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
But we're talking about transformation challenges. What's a realistic timeline where somebody can health, with health in mind and not being significantly dangerous, can begin to transform the way they look? Is it like 2 weeks, a month, 6 weeks, 12 weeks? What's a realistic time frame for somebody who's disciplined?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the what we see in our transformation challenge, it's 90 days, which is 12 weeks. And it sounds short, but 12 weeks is a long time. I mean, those people are seeing, you know, some of our champions are, you know, losing 25, 30 pounds of body fat, adding some muscle, to the point where people even question if it's really 90 days. And I'm like, well, we're paying them $50,000. So we are making sure, we are vetting that these are real. But I think people underestimate when you change your lifestyle completely, just what the body is capable of. I mean, when you do a complete 180 and you are eating better, going to bed on time, going to the gym 4 or 5 days a week, you're cultivating like just better relationships. You're less stressed because you're getting up early and planning ahead. Like, you know, I mean, you can make some changes probably in 3 to 4 weeks, you'll start to notice it. But I mean, those everlasting changes, I would say at least 60 days would be the minimum, because we've looked at what's the best way to do a challenge. 90 days just seems to have the most impact for setting people up for success once the challenge is over, because the last thing I'd want to do is just have a bunch of people lose weight and then gain it all back and be in a worse place.
Yeah, so my next question was, how do you continue to sustain that beyond the challenge where you get to the point where you're looking at yourself saying, and I always talk about, there is a reality, and we'll call it the Northeast of the country, there's a truth day here, and the truth day is the first day you're going swimming and people are over. That is the truth day. This is the truth of what you've done. This is me. I'm just like, man, you take your shirt off, you're like, fuck, here's the truth. You know, it really is. I mean, when you get naked and look in a mirror, the truth isn't any more true than when you look at yourself. What have you done to yourself? Yeah. So it can be really good or really bad, but you know, how do you sustain a lifestyle like that? And look, once you get to that point of getting to what you look like, how sustainable is it? How much discipline do you have to employ, or is it just the way you're going to continue to live your life?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that comes down to, I mean, I've spent the better part of the last 15 years coaching athletes wanting to solve that problem. I think a lot of the solutions that I've come up with are, you've got to implement some changes that aren't that aren't so far out of the realm of your normal routine. So what I mean by that is, like, we don't worry about brushing our teeth. We don't worry about doing laundry. We just do it. And so if you have a routine where you don't think about going for a walk, you don't think about meal prepping, you just do it, then it's very easy to maintain it. What happens in a lot of situations is people go so far outside of their normal routine, they just go like some zero carb, 3 hours of cardio, they do some crazy stuff, and all they're thinking about is the goal. And then when it's over, they're not going to stick with those approaches. So we do not want to, you know, one of the things that we do with our challenge is we make people write an essay, because we want to hear what's changed. Because for me, what changed when I first did my first diet was I learned how to manage my time better. I learned how to plan ahead. I learned how to set goals and achieve them. And I also learned how to say no to people when I didn't want to do something, like, you know. So for me, setting people up for success out of that is just helping them make some minor adjustments to the way they look at food, the way they look at fitness. You know, a lot of people think of fitness as like, I have to go to the gym. No, you don't. Walk your dog a little extra. Buy a treadmill for your house. Put a weight set in the garage. Make fitness fit your routine. Don't make it like so difficult to have to go to the gym or have to do something. Make it a part of your routine.
One thing that was difficult for me for so many years was, I think human beings, and I'm sure you could agree with this and touched on a little bit, are in a routine essentially, or routine-based animals, where we like our routine. Kids like a routine. It's where we really thrive the most. And sometimes your routine gets disrupted. So can you allude to that a little bit, maybe discuss like the disruption of a routine and how important a routine is?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm probably one of the most routine-based people. And sometimes I struggle. I have a plan for each day. And if things aren't going according to my plan, I can struggle with that. But what's allowed me to kind of circumvent that, and you can maybe attest to this as a father as well, I have to get up before the world gets up. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for things to happen. I have to get up and already have either done some cardio, done some workout, planned my meals, had my breakfast, so that when I find out that my son has a sprained wrist and I have to go to the hospital for 3 hours, right, or that, oh, well, the nanny didn't show up, so I have to drive someone to soccer, whatever the thing that comes up is, I can simply go, cool, I can handle that because I'm already ahead of schedule, versus reacting to whatever's thrown at me that day. That's a lesson I had to learn. You know, you hear it when you're young, early to bed, early to rise. Yeah, right. I'm going to stay up till 3. I'm just going to stay up later than everyone and get it all done. The minute I switched that schedule and started getting up at, I mean, it's getting dumb now. Sometimes I get up at 4. Because I want to get up and get things done. It's just better. It's just a better way to live. Because I have kids, whatever the reason being, but I just feel so much better when I get up early and get things done.
One thing that's worked for me, and I've talked about this before in the podcast, and I'm not trying to sound like a braggart to anybody. I don't hold myself accountable to what you're doing. Pretty consistently for the past 2 years, I've been working out twice a day, heavy powerlifting twice a day. And one of the good things about this is when kids do happen, because namely, most of the time there's a disruption or interruption in my routine. It is kid related for the most part. Not every single time, but a lot of times. You have a lot of kids and they're younger. They depend on you for a lot of things. So it could be a sick kid or whatever it may be. There's baseball practice, soccer practice, jujitsu, whatever the fuck you got to go to. So for me, there's a lot of margin to miss the 14 workouts. Like I can go to 12, even if I have to go to 11, and still feel really good about what I've accomplished this week, and not in comparison to everybody else, but for me, my maintenance is 5 days a week or six workouts a week. I feel like at this age, I really see significant change in strength at 12 plus a week. I mean, I got to tell you, dude, I'm 41 and I do heavy powerlifting, and people come over and work out with me sometimes. They're like, dude, you're fucking strong. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like this is not a brag. I'm in here. I've been doing this I've been working out for 24 years. I've been doing twice a day for about 2. And dude, I'm stronger than I've ever been. I feel fantastic. And people will often caution, like, I think it's too much. Well, like, I don't. I actually don't think it's too much at all. As a matter of fact, I've been trying to life hack a little bit of how I can knock out 3 a day and just start implementing more cardio. And I guess that leads me to my next question is, you know, is there a cardio versus weightlifting ratio that we should be looking at? Because I got to tell you, I don't do really any cardio. I should be doing more of it, but while I'm powerlifting the way that I do, my heart is racing. My breathing is intensified. But I could be doing more cardio for sure. Things that I'm constantly trying to play with in my life.
Yeah, I mean, cardio, I think for me, for many, many years, it was a bad word. Like, it was the thing that you had to do to punish yourself. You know, I played sports growing up and running was the punishment. So for me, cardio was a thing that I avoided. I learned early on when I started doing bodybuilding competitions and I would start contest prep and my coach would give me some cardio to do, there would be this euphoric period of about 8, 10, 12 weeks where I just felt better. And I never correlated it with the cardio. I correlated it with, okay, I'm focused, I'm eating better. What I soon realized was I just feel better when I get up and do some cardio. Now, there is such a thing as cardio that is too intense to recover from, but I literally have a treadmill right here. If I don't get up and walk on my treadmill every morning and get sweaty, I don't feel as good. My brain doesn't work as well. My back bothers me. So for me, I think there is a certain amount of at least lifestyle cardio that is beneficial. If you're familiar with the research on blue zones, there's these 7 or 8 areas of the world where the average age of the population reaches 100. And they look at the lifestyle factors of these blue zones and they say, what are some of the common factors? Without a doubt, one of them is that they are getting a lot of non-exercise activity. Their daily routine requires them to walk from place to place, right? Some of them are like third world countries where they're walking to and from a water source, to and from a market. But if you think back to like high school and everyone goes, well, why were we in such good shape in high school? I don't know about you, but I rode my bike to high school. I walked from class to class. I had PE. I rode my bike home. I never, you know, you're moving all day. And then you go to college or a job and you just do this all day, plunk. And I think even though it can be a small amount, it adds up over the weeks and months and years. And since I've started doing this daily walking routine, which I've documented a lot on YouTube and stuff, I've just never stayed lean so easy. And walking has had zero negative impact on my strength. If anything, I've gotten stronger. My recovery is better. My digestion improves. My joints are happier. So I think there is a amount or a minimal dose of daily activity that we need to be our best versions of ourselves.
That's really good. I mean, people are listening to this and, you know, what do you say to somebody? Unfortunately, I think their report just came out that like 40% of police officers are obese. And I can explain why that is in some sense. That's not the majority of our listener. So maybe the majority of our listenership has some correlation to law enforcement, but we got 600,000 subscribers now, somewhere in the ballpark of that. They're clearly not all cops. So with that being said, I can explain why. It's because they're overworked. They have to find nutritional sources when they can. We're down in this country 90,000 cops from where we should be. So we're supposed to be at like about 750,000 cops. We're down to about 660,000.
Is that from the 2020 when all the strikes were happening and they were shutting down the police municipalities and stuff?
This is from nobody wants to do this fucking job when nobody gives them the benefit of the doubt and the support they need to sure. Do this job. So like the idea that you're going to go make 65 or 70 or 100 or $120,000 a year and possibly go to jail, in their minds at least, or you're working for an administration that doesn't support you and you have to make split second decisions. And if you're wrong, you might be going to prison. Or they're watching videos, which is not the norm, but people have gotten this very brazen attitude that they can disrespect law enforcement. And I was thinking about the other day, like we didn't tolerate that. I mean, started this profession 22 years ago. We were zero tolerance. We wouldn't even allow kids to curse in front of us. And so they knew that. They knew there were repercussions that you would, if you start to fuck with us, we were not taking it. We were not tolerating it. And there was an inherent respect where I think there is still, but the ones who are brazen have become more brazen towards law enforcement. And we're human beings. Nobody wants to be treated like a piece of shit. And then there's no repercussions to something. There's nothing you can do. Like there's no, you're doing this job that really, in some sense, people should really be admiring the work that you do because you're doing it for so little and seeing such horrible things and enduring this awful stuff. So
well, I think some of the communities where the police are no longer present, they're starting to feel the effects. I mean, I've heard things in Atlanta, San Francisco, Seattle, like friends that live there that they're like, nope, people are just getting out now.
Oh, it's wild. Oh, dude, it's like they're not. Here's the good news for you. They're all going to Florida. Right. Like, I mean, it's fucking crazy, but I know at least 5 guys here in New Jersey, which was unheard of 22 years ago, that just left. I mean, 10, 12 years into it and just went to Florida because they understand the overall support from your governor and all the sheriffs there of law enforcement. And they like the idea of how red the state is and how much support they receive. That's a big part of why these men and women are flocking to the South. They're sick of these fucking politicians just making them political pawns and essentially making the job 10 times more difficult. And now they're paying the consequences. But the cool thing is they don't care because it doesn't affect them in their ivory towers and their suburbs and their beautiful neighborhoods where these politicians live. It affects the men and women of law enforcement and the citizens of communities that don't have, that are impoverished. They don't have the resources to offer. I mean, you got agencies here making $190,000 a year as patrolmen. They have no problem fulfilling their vacancies. But you have agencies here still making for New Jersey $70,000, $65,000, $80,000 a year. And nobody taking that goddamn job. Like nobody. So they have nobody to work it. They have nobody. It's even as a training company, it's even affecting us. And we do a lot of guerrilla marketing, cold calling to try to put asses in seats in our programs. And we hear the same thing over and over again lately is like, we have the money. We don't have the people to send. We have nobody. They're dismantling specialized units and putting them back to patrol to service the basic needs of society. It's fucking wild. I mean, they're destroying the NYPD guys. You can look at anybody from the NYPD. They're hitting these guys 14, 16-hour shifts, 6-7 days a week. And if you look at them, they look horrific. They're fat. They're out of shape. It's not even their fault. They're just surviving. They're just being beaten to death with the amount of work that they have to do and the demand on them because the next move that they did was after de Blasio fucked it all up was give them $135,000 a year as top pay in like 6 years. But dude, what they don't realize now is today's generation doesn't value money in that. There's some value to money, but we clearly see it. They value purpose and respect more than they do material items. Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook group. We have so much information going out every single day and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
Yeah. So when I was I got my master's degree in business administration, I mean, many years ago. And I think one of the things that always stuck out to me was like, there was a pay scale where above a certain amount of money. And back then it was $70,000 or $60,000. The happiness or security does not increase at all, right? So then people start to look at what other things they value once they get to a minimum pay. And that's probably what's happening there is like, you know, the money no longer means anything. So now they're like, I want to do what I want to do. I want to do my hobbies. I want to be there for my family. Whatever they value becomes more important once you've got that established, like, you know, roof over your head and the security of, you know, having food and stuff like that.
And you get one life to live, right? So like, for me, it's just a constant game of like, I hope I have no regrets. I'm really building my life around having no regrets.
Well, the service industry, so you talk about the police officers. My dad was a firefighter, a little different. You know, obviously, like they have, you know, I always loved my dad's job because he was home so much. He had those 24-hour shifts where he was home. I think he worked 9 days a month. And my mom was a nurse. And let me tell you, she worked like 6 to 6 every day, drove an hour. And the nurses in both hospitals and private practice are also very obese. That is a profession that, you know, my mom avoided it because she's very health conscious. But like just seeing the people in that. So I'm sure it's a very similar thing. They're overworked. They are inundated with food that is calorically dense. Everyone wants to bring nurses like donuts and, you know, things like that. So I just, I work with some clients who are nurses who do bodybuilding and they always tell me like, oh, it's impossible to eat at work because it's just cakes and donuts and desserts all day. That's all people have. And that, you know, they're running around slamming a coffee, eating a piece of cake going between patients. So it's definitely a situation where, you know, if we don't take care of those people, A, they're not going to be around long enough to take care of us and no one's going to want to fill those jobs.
Mm-mm. And think about it, like, you know, where are you eating at 3:00 in the morning when you get a chance to eat?
Right.
24-hour fucking drive-throughs.
Yeah.
Especially in places that don't have many options. I mean, like people don't realize probably majority of Florida is fucking pretty hillbilly-ish.
Right? Oh, yeah. Florida's like big city. But like in between that, it's pickup trucks and yeah,
it's not even like paved roads. People don't realize it. Like you're like,
yeah.
Motherfuckers don't have electricity in certain, like Florida is like, you would think you're in Appalachia.
In a majority of Florida. Without internet still, yeah. So yeah, it's I guess that's what keeps Florida reasonably priced, because they just keep building out to where there's nothing. Eventually that nothing becomes the next, you know, big city. But yeah, it's still very affordable if you get outside the city limits in Tampa even.
But some of those people that I know that work in those places, like, there's nothing open at night, like, except the McDonald's, you know, and that's what we're eating. Or, you know, they're trying to get food. So, yeah, I mean, it does take discipline, I think, to prepare for that. Well,
that's where planning ahead comes in. You know, that's where having a tub of protein powder or having, you know, a meal service, like, you know, I work with Icon Meals. They pack and ship flash frozen meals. You know, those kind of things go a long way, because when you get hungry, you're not always going to make the best decision. But if you have something prepped and ready to go, it just helps. Literally, when I travel through airports, I bring a tub of protein powder with me everywhere I go. I'll even put it in little Ziploc bags. And I almost wrote on this, not cocaine, because it's white powder. And I'm like, I wonder if they ever go through my backpack and pull these little baggies out. For me, if I'm in an airport and I see, you know, Chick-fil-A, man, that sounds good right now. Or at no cost, I can throw some water in a, you know, thing, drink it, and then I feel satiated. That to me has been a game changer for traveling, is not waiting until I'm hungry to eat, but having something available. This is the habits though that you have to adopt to reach your physique goals. And this is where it becomes easier, right? It's not, you're not reacting to your situation. You've already planned ahead, and now you're capable of making the right decision.
You know, I think that people see the price of a prepped meal, and I'm not here to you know, promote any prep meal company. And they might say, oh, it's $14 or $15, but okay, so maybe it's $3 or $4 more than what you planned on spending on a prep meal like this. However, you've got to think about the inherent cost, the back end of it. You know, you're saving $3, $4 on the front end, or $7 or $5. But, you know, when you're sitting in that doctor's office at 48 and the doctor's going, yeah, look, you're 70% clogged in your left artery. We're right. going to have to do a Roto-Rooter job on you. We don't know. It's like a 70% survival rate. You know, so when you think about how do you want your pain, you want it now or later. We're talking about money. Some things are just worth it.
Well, I mean, honestly, like when I go through a drive-thru now, like, you know, because my kids want a cheeseburger or something, I'll go get them. And I'm like, it's $30, $40 sometimes when I go through the drive-thru. So drive-thru food is not as cheap as it used to be. I don't really look at the drive-thru as a cheaper option at this point. So the prep meals, especially Icon, you know, they're 10 to 12, 13 bucks a meal. And I have them in the freezer, and I just take a couple out every week so I can heat them up. But yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of the drive-thru anymore, because I focus so much on protein. And if you want protein, even I think it's might be McDonald's that just switched their menu. They don't even do grilled chicken anymore. It's only fried chicken.
But we're not selling enough. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You know, it's why... We had a company that was in New Jersey. It was called Muscle Maker Grill. And I, you know, every cop in the world ate there. It was next to a gym.
Oh, it was Victor Martinez's company. Yeah.
Yeah. So dude, I lived there, right? Because it was a healthier option, but they weren't like I don't want to say a healthier option, it was a cleaner option in some sense. Yeah. So when they started franchising, a lot of my friends bought franchises, and I'm like, you know, and I'm albeit I was a cop for a lot of years, and now I'm not, I haven't been one in 8 years. And I'm significantly, you know, obviously much more of a businessman and entrepreneur now. Even then I had a good sense of things. And I'm like, you know, you're going to jump in on a franchise in this. I'm like, I'm not that I don't believe in the product. I eat it nonstop, but people want to be fucking fat. And so that alludes to what I was saying, you know, what you're saying about McDonald's taking grilled chicken off the menu, because people aren't going to eat it. They don't want to be healthy. You're not going to convince the overall majority of people. It's a very boutique thing to eat clean. Right. So as nuts as it sounds, people are addicted to food. You know, so one thing I tell people who complain about food is, I don't know how you feel about this, but I do fast. I don't eat breakfast anymore. I do work out heavy. And then I fast up until about 1 o'clock, and I try to sustain my hunger satiate my hunger with just black coffee. It really does a nice job, and I kind of keep my mind off of it. I have enjoyed fasting. So people say, well, it's expensive to eat clean. Well, if you start getting to a diet and a discipline, you can skip essentially a meal and save yourself that extra $15. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, fasting is obviously very popular, because I think first thing first, it teaches us to retrain our brains that every time we have a slight inkling for hunger, we're not going to die if we miss a meal, right? Well, you just get comfortable. And honestly, like if you had to ask me, like, what's the one thing that's caused the obesity epidemic in this country. When I was growing up, when you went to get an auto part from the auto parts store, you weren't faced with an entire rack of candy bars and sodas. Everywhere you go, when you check out, there is snacks and candies and soda everywhere you go. It's almost impossible not to get something when you're checking out. Snacking to me is the one thing that's changed. Like when I came home from school, I ate what I was served or I didn't have food. Like now it's like, it's you're constantly being like, you know, spoon fed, whatever you want, wherever you want it. And so, and we're always hungry. Like our body is kind of like, yeah, like it's a survival instinct. So,
right.
You know, for me, fasting is great because it teaches people like, hey, it's okay to be a little bit hungry for a few hours. So I'll still use fasting too. Like my wife and I have a date night tomorrow night and I don't want to track that. I don't want to worry about what I'm having. I'm going to get a big ass steak and a big ass potato and I'm going to enjoy it. So I'm probably going to eat a little bit later in the morning and maybe just have a protein shake instead of my full normal breakfast. So I've got that whole thing saved up. And my natural eating rhythm, I have my last meal around 7 o'clock. I don't eat again until 8 o'clock. So I have a natural 12 to 13 hour fasting window anyway. So though I don't talk about intermittent fasting as the end all be all, it's more because people think that fasting is inherently somehow better than any other form of caloric restriction when it's not, if you just compare calories to calories, right? There's no magic, like because you fast,
right,
your metabolism speeds up or this and that. No, it's just a mechanism for you to actually consume less calories in the same amount of time than you normally would. So I think it's a great idea. You know, I tried a little 16-8 fast. I just struggled getting all my food in those 8 hours. So it, for me, it's more of like a 12-12. I usually fast about 12 hours, just naturally.
Yeah. I recently saw a video of a place here in New Jersey. It's like a nightclub scene. And it was from when I was first starting to go out. So like, you know, probably in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, I look at it comparatively to the crowds that you see now. And there's a clear difference in how people look. And I'm going to say women, and I'm not trying to say a chauvinistic statement because I'm not looking at men. I notice women when I go out as a single guy, right? So like, you know, when I saw women back then I see it now and I'm like, there's a clear difference in the eating habits and dietary habits of these kids. I mean, I don't recall children being and adolescents and you know, girls in their 20s being so obese as they, I don't think they were. Would you agree with that at all, Paul?
Oh, I mean, that's hands down the thing that has changed in our country the most. When I travel now, it's odd to see somebody in shape.
Right. And there back then it wasn't, dude, like in the mid 90s, no. I feel like people were in shape.
Well, I will say this, right? I think there is a shift happening right now, and we won't see it prominently for a few years, but I think there's a shift happening with the younger TikTok generation. They are hyper-focused on being fit. I've just noticed, like, when I go to the gym now, it's a very young contingent. I'm next to a very major university, one of the top 10 largest in the country, University of South Florida. It's here in Tampa. And all those students are in the gyms around here, and they're all lifting. And it's hard for me to say, but I think there's going to be a shift back the other direction. You know, I think parents of maybe a certain generation weren't educating their kids. They weren't paying attention. I think it's going the other direction now. So I think that will be corrected a little bit just based on what I'm seeing. But absolutely, I feel self-conscious when I go to the beach being in shape because people are like, what do you eat to look like that? Oh my gosh, you must, you know, just eat broccoli and chicken. And I'm just like, no, I'll have a drink with you. I'll eat ice cream, whatever it is, you know, I can fit that in, but it's the other 23 hours and 30 minutes a day that I spend that I'm not just being an asshole with my body. That's the difference. Whereas I think, you know, if you and I were to go out to a restaurant and I go, let me just get a grilled chicken, no oil, and a baked potato, no butter. Everyone at the table is going to be like, oh, Mr. Healthy. You almost, it's almost like peer pressure to be like, you're not going to get the cheese fries and a 20 ounce lager, you know? So like, learning how to deal with that, it's a skill. You've got to be comfortable going, I'm going to be the guy that's eating what I want and not, you know, giving into what do you guys want to do with yourselves?
So like when we do those like mom and dad meetups and groups, like, dude, I'm the outcast, right? And I've even been criticized for being the outcast, but I've what a trick where if I'm in a situation and people don't really know me, but like, you know, obviously we have some notoriety from the company and the podcast and the kind of following that we have. So I'll be in social situations, but I'm deciding not to drink that night. And people are like, oh, you like, what can you get to drink? I'll just go like this. I'm like, yeah, I'm recovering. I don't drink. And as soon as you say that, even though I'm not, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, can I get you water? Like, is everything okay? So it's interesting how we perceive and judge people until we hear that there's possibly a reason why. It is just not acceptable to not drink and consume alcohol like a fucking fish in our society, which leads to essentially, you know, I've been asked, like, what's your problem with alcohol? I'm somebody who enjoys progress and achievement. And I don't know if there's any substance outside of illicit narcotics that prevents that. Like, I like being able to think and come up with good ideas and all this other shit. And like, you know, I like progress and all that stuff. I don't think there's any substance known to man outside of illicit narcotics that will prevent that more than alcohol. I mean, it just disrupts literally everything.
Everything. I just did a really good video on my YouTube channel discussing. So I made a pact with myself last November. I was going to take 1 year off of alcohol. And the reason I did it wasn't because I was drinking a lot. It was because there's never a good time to say no to drinking unless you have a reason, right? So, so for me, I just told my wife, I told my friends, I'm not drinking for a year. No one bugs me. No one asks me if I want to drink anymore. Because if you're open to it, it's just way harder to just say no to, like, let me just buy you a shot. Hey, you know, I travel the country every weekend. I'm at a different city at a different bodybuilding show, and someone's friend or someone's like, hey, let me buy you a drink. And I don't drink. So if you don't have that kind of, like you said, you have the canned response, oh, I'm recovering. I just tell people, you know what? I'm just taking 12 months off to drinking. And they're like, oh, that's cool. That's a cool thing that you're doing. Why are you doing it? I go, I don't know. I'm 47. I just want to see how it works. I'm 7 months in. I mean, I'm not looking forward. I'm not waiting to drink. I'll probably go on a vacation at some point and have a margarita, but it's not like the thing that I'm ready to be. I feel so good right now. I almost like don't want to mess with it.
You know, moving on to the next thing that I want to talk about before we end this podcast is developing habits. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, because I'm sure that developing habits is a big part of experiencing success in what you see yourself becoming as a human being. And I think everybody should want to see themselves. I think everybody does want to see themselves be the best version of themselves. So let's talk about developing habits a little bit.
I mean, habit from a neurological standpoint, it's like a skill. So like, if you think of like powerlifting as a skill, you know, when you learn how to squat properly, all the muscles in your body, you're learning how to fire in the proper order for you to execute a squat properly. It's the same thing in your brain with your behaviors. If you set up your routine, and it might be a pain in the butt, and I'll go back to like learning to get up early, because I was a night owl. I would just put all my work off and stay up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. But then I realized I was missing every morning with my kids. I was getting up at 9 or 10, whatever. Yeah. I run my own business. I make plenty of money. I can do whatever I want. But I told myself, I want to get up with my kids before school. And then when they're gone, I'll go to work. So I made myself for 30 days, get up every day at 5 o'clock, go do cardio, go work out, come in the house at 6:30. And man, that first couple of weeks was rough, dude. Like I was like a zombie. That alarm would go off and I would cuss. And now but over time that became my new normal. And now I don't even have to set my alarm anymore. If I don't set my alarm, I'm up at 5. If I look at my phone, sometimes it's like 4:40. I'm like, whatever, I'll go ahead and get up now. So like habits, we think of them as like, oh, you have such good habits. Those are, you literally force them. You change them. You create them. So, you know, I you watch a lot of motivational speakers, and I love some of them as much as the next guy. I love my, you know, Eric Thomas and Gary Vee and these guys. But the one thing you learn is that they just repeat these patterns over and over to just their routine. The teeth brushing thing, I heard a psychologist say that once at a presentation. And I thought that's genius, because no one thinks about brushing their teeth. You get up, you brush your teeth. You go to bed, you brush your teeth. You floss whenever you eat something. You don't think about that as like, no one asks you, how's your flossing going? You just do it. Fitness, I feel like people, I got to go to the gym. It's the gym. I'm like, my wife doesn't ask me if I went to the gym. She goes, what time are you going so I can meet you there? Or like, so it, once that happens, it just, the flip switches, right? So on the weekends, I pull out the smoker. I cook, 3 or 4 days worth of meat. We put it in the Tupperwares. My wife doesn't ask me, are you cooking food? We just go to the store and get it, or we just have it delivered and I start making it. So these habits that seem like such good, healthy habits to have, you've got to initiate them. You've got to start them. It's never going to change. But as soon as you start doing it, man, you know, and everything's been like that for me, even YouTube. I remember watching a Gary Vee video and he's like, you want to build your YouTube audience? Do this. And I said, all right, I'm going to do it. And I did it. And it was a pain in the butt. It was make one video every day for 7 days. Doesn't sound like much trouble, but when you're not used to editing, when you're not used to uploading, when you're not used to making a thumbnail, the first day that video probably took me 45 minutes to make. By the day seven, I was shooting, editing, and uploading in 15 minutes, right. My entire video, right? Now, mind you, these aren't fancy videos, but just getting a video out into the universe, that's that first step for some people is the hardest problem. Everyone's like, how'd you start YouTube? I'm like, I don't know. I just freaking started it. You just do it. So it's the same thing with like, how did you start getting up early? Man, it sucked. I set my alarm and I just got up. But when you get up early and do things before the day starts, like I literally go downstairs and hang out with my kids for an hour and come back up to work. And I'm just like, man, I've already got so much done. I saw my kids. I got my cardio done. I got my first meal in. I've already answered 20 emails. I'm sitting down at my desk, like excited, not like stressed about what's my inbox look like. You know, it's a complete different mind shift. I'm not short tempered with my kids. I'm more excited to spend a minute with them versus if I'm like, I know I got a bunch of emails to answer. Let me go down and see the kids. Dad, can you help me with my shoes? I don't have time. Like, it's just a complete different mind shift when you, you put those things into place and it starts to bleed into everything that you do.
You know, one thing that you brought up, and it just triggered a thought of mine because I hear this excuse a lot. That your wife meets you at the gym. I've heard people be like, yo, I can't work out unless I have somebody who motivates me to work out. Let me just say something to everybody. Like, excuses are one of the, I say this often. When I learned how to identify excuses, I can't even make them anymore, right? I have to try to explain myself if I ever even try to make an excuse for something. But the thought that you need somebody else to be there as a coach to like, you got to get over that hump. That's so ridiculous. So people have to get beyond that. They have to employ that discipline with their routine. And I was at a point before I left for Greece where if I wasn't working out the second time, I didn't feel right. Where now I'm like, get your butt back down there for the second time today. I'm still getting back used to it. It's crazy, dude. It's amazing how much if you just disrupt your routine just a little bit, even for the 8 days that I was gone, it has been a nightmare trying to get back on it.
I'll say this. I agree with you. And what I noticed the last couple of years was, you know, there's a point in my year where I almost travel every weekend in the summer for bodybuilding shows. And so I would get in the routine of like during the week, I was great, but I would go to the bodybuilding shows and then my clients would be like, let's go get a drink. I'd get a drink. I wouldn't get up early. I wouldn't do my cardio. I'd miss a workout on the weekends. This year, since November, I have gotten up early. Every hotel I'm in, I get up at 5 or 6. I go do my 30 minutes of cardio and just start my day like that. And it's been a complete game changer for me to never come out of my routine. Not even if I'm at, you know, oh, I'm in Austin, Texas. I should go to the bars because I've never been here. I've kind of rewound that back this year. And it's just been great for me to see the positive change it's made because it's encouraged me to go, I'm doing the right thing. Like, this is the right thing for me to be doing. I've done my, you know, drinking years and I'm still going to have my moments, right? Weddings or bachelor party, whatever I go to, something like that. But every weekend, no, I'm done with that.
You know, here's one funny thing. I'm dialing back how much I'm on the road because just the role in this company has changed for me. But I pick my hotels based on their gyms.
Oh yeah.
Most of them have
good gyms now. Yeah.
Some of them do. Some of them are fucking horrible, but I'll even stay, you know, I try to stay pretty close to the venue that I'm going to be speaking at, but I'll stay 40 minutes away if I can find a hotel with a better gym, because I'm going to work out. If I'm there for 2 days, I'm working out 4 times and I can pretty much get, I'll adjust what I'm doing at home to the machinery that's available to me on the road. And people hear conversations like this, Paul, and they say, like, you know, fuck these guys, right? Like, oh, fuck these guys. Why do you think, and this will be the last thing I ask you, why do you think people are so quick to say, fuck these guys whenever a conversation like this?
I mean, whenever, any time in my life, historically, when I've said that, it's because I'm insecure, right? It's, you know, there's probably a time in my life where I would have said, fuck that guy, like that, you're wasting your life. But, you know, you go through phases of life when you start to realize what's important. You know, for me, fitness has always been kind of a foundational thing. So it, you know, it ebbs and flows how fit I am. But the things that I've learned are, no matter how fit I am, I'm just a better version of myself when I do the routine that I do now. I am the best version of myself. And luckily for me, you know, my wife and I have been together 15 years now. We've kind of gone through those transformations ourselves. You know, we met when we were in the bar scene. She ran track for Florida State University. I played baseball in college. So like, we were always athletes, but you know, we've ebbed and flowed, and now we're both in this same place where she likes to play tennis, I like to bodybuild, but we still have this fitness mentality built into our daily routines. And I got to imagine, like, when we go to the beach, we look a little different than everyone at the beach. Like, maybe they're all going, fuck these people. What do they do? Why do they look like this? That's how I feel. You know, like the other day, like the dads I was at the beach with, they were getting shit from their wives because they were like, oh, look how hot that girl is. Why don't our wives look like that? And they were like, well, why don't you guys look like Paul? You know, and I was like, ew, you know, don't do that to me. But like, that's, I kind of feel like the outcast. So I don't know, if you're insecure, that's why you say things like that. So I think the people that, because if you're not insecure, you go, good for that person. Good for them. They're doing what they love. I don't question why people buy a car and spend, you know, $30,000 to make it go half a second faster in a quarter mile. I don't say fuck those people that are racing by me on the road. I go, good for you. That's what makes you happy. I'm just going to sit here and go 45 and not stress on the street. So like, I think as you age, you just realize there are so many ways to be happy, and I'm going to be happy my way. You be happy your way. But I have a dad that's never once said a bad word about a human being on this planet. Like, he's the most laid back, easygoing, just live and let live human being. And maybe that's from being a firefighter. He was a Marine. He's just seen a lot of shit. But that's how I was raised too. You know, anytime I have something negative to say about somebody, I question it and go, but why am I really saying this? I'm insecure. And that's really what it comes down to for me.
Paul, I appreciate you so much for coming on here and having this discussion with me. Where can people find more about you and follow you? And I, you know, implore everybody to follow all Paul's social media stuff. It's actually cool. That's how we ended up here. We DM'd him on Instagram, got with him.
I'm curious if one of my best friends lives in Plattsburgh, New York. He's a homicide detective, and he's retiring in, you know, 1 year, 3 months, 14 hours, and he's already bought a house in Florida. So he's your typical guy you talked about earlier. I'm wondering if he listens to this. His name is Ron Parmeter. I'd love to hear. But really, the best way to find me is just, you know, my name is Revella, R-E-V-E-L-I-A. And my favorite, most consistent platform is YouTube. I have a podcast called The Pro Physique Code. I have an Instagram page. I'm learning TikTok. But I just love to share information. I answer a lot of questions on my YouTube. That's basically my format. Is I get a question that seems like something that might help a lot of people. Like, you know, hey, I'm a nurse and I can't lose weight. How should I approach this? You know, I've done videos on shift work and stuff. Just basically any question that I feel confident in answering, I stay in my lane. That's what I love to do. So I'm also going to be at just about every major bodybuilding show, you know, national show. For anybody that's in that bodybuilding circuit, come say hi. I'm a people person. I love meeting people and hearing their stories and talking. And you know, when I travel, that's why I love what I do. I love going to bodybuilding shows because I love people.
Paul, thank you again, brother. I appreciate it.
Good to meet you, Dennis. I'm sure I'll see you.
Yeah, likewise.
Soon.
Yeah, cool, man. See ya. Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.